Well, good day and welcome to this episode of the Disaster Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and we are bringing you another fine episode this week, which I'm excited to dig into. Before we get to that, though, we have to get in with our co-host, Sam Bradley. Sam, I know you're a little chilly out there in Colorado, but surviving nonetheless. How are you?
Well, one thing that isn't boring is the weather. And I think there's a whole lot of people that are tired of snow, especially people in Texas who don't know what to do with themselves. So fortunately, we have the Depod ones, both of them, Becky and Dan. And oh my God, Becky, what the heck is going on with the storm? I think it snowed every day here to some extent for like the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's been a pretty persistent pattern that we're hoping to break out of here soon. But I mean, my goodness, the cold really actually has been the main story for parts of Texas, Oklahoma. The snow, too, this past week, they had snow, I think, as far south as Del Rio, Texas. Very, very far south for snow, for cold temperatures. But really, the overarching story has been the complete failure of the power grid in Texas. It's disconnected from the federal grid. They did not plan for temperatures of this cold, of this duration. So the natural gas lines froze, and a lot of people in Texas have been without power or off and on power as they've been doing rolling blackouts for several days. It's honestly a crisis. It's a humanitarian disaster in the state of Texas, and it's shameful. It's extremely cold. It hasn't been this cold in several decades. There were some records broken, but this is not completely out of the question for it to be this cold. The duration definitely is a bit unusual. But it's really just truly astounding to see the complete failure of infrastructure down there.
Well, I guess in this day and age, we should have learned from 2020, always expect a worst case scenario, one you don't think you're going to see.
Pretty much.
Pretty much. Well, even Dr. Joe, you got snow in Tennessee, and I know you're tired of it.
Yeah, most definitely. We got another 3 or 4 inches in the last 24 hours, so we're at about 9 right now, and that is a heck of a snowfall for Memphis, Tennessee.
Yeah, that's even more than we got.
Have you received any impacts from the weather, Joe, otherwise than the snow? I mean, the cold weather is affecting you guys, too?
Yeah, bitterly cold temps, a ruptured water line in my attic, a leak in my roof, and a lot of really chilly dogs.
Aww.
I blame Kyle.
You'll have a chance to. He's going to get back at you next week, I think. So hold on to your shorts. So, Jamie, all three of you, what are you getting back east then?
Well, I know here, I mean, we've had ice and combination of ice and snow all day. And it's just all it's done is made what I can shovel harder to shovel and heavier. So it's really been a mess. And I know there's been tornadoes up and down parts of the East Coast as parts of the storm roared through earlier this week. I don't know, Dan, have you got any more extreme weather updates from this past week?
Oh, I mean, it's just sort of never ending. I've been going through statistics and I think some people wonder, well, is this typical? No, this is not typical. Like, this is a very unusual weather pattern. You mentioned tornadoes, Jamie. We had a tornado, significant tornado, EF3, which hit Brunswick County, North Carolina, I believe, a couple days ago, and unfortunately caused 3 fatalities and about, I think, 10 injuries. It was on the ground for, I think, 22 miles, which is a significant length of time, obviously. 22 miles, 275-yard wide tornado, and then hit at night, just before midnight on February 15th, during the evening there. So that was really there was a severe weather side of this storm system in the last couple of days. But the statistics on the winter weather are just sort of crazy. I mean, Dr. Joe mentioned, he said snow in Memphis. The normal for the season in Memphis for snow is 3.8 inches. They've had 12 and a half this month. In Little Rock, I think the normal, again, is right around 3 or so inches. They've had 20 inches of snow in Little Rock, Arkansas, this month. Even places like Salt Lake City just picked up 11.7 inches of snow yesterday. That's out west, obviously. And that's their biggest snowfall, or it's their seventh snowiest day on record in Salt Lake City. Becky mentioned it snowed as far south as Del Rio, where they picked up somewhere between 7 and 10 inches of snow today. You've had the cold that Becky mentioned in Texas is historic. It hasn't happened really in the last 30 years. That was the last big outbreak in Texas. And it's really damaged a ton of the citrus crop in Texas because the temperature is below freezing, all the way down to Brownsville. For instance, in Corpus Christi, Texas, the normal high temperature is 71. In Corpus Christi, the high temperature on Tuesday was 31 degrees, 40 below normal. You've had temperatures down to close to zero in places like Memphis, which typically have low temps in the 40s. It's just been an incredible stretch of winter weather across the entire nation, really.
Well, and of course, it's lasted so long, too. But I got a question for you, Dan. Is it true that a tornado at this time of year was spawned by this snowstorm?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's always warm air somewhere, right? And although it's been cold in most places, the one area that's really been spared most of this intense cold has been the Florida Peninsula and parts of the coastal, you know, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina area. And all you need is a little bit of warm, moist air to come up. And you've obviously got a lot of cold air, and that clash of air masses really helps produce severe weather. And that's what happened on Tuesday evening there in the Carolinas. So you can definitely get these types of severe weather on the warmer side of the system, where on the backside you get a lot of winter weather. We've also had a ton of freezing rain. We've had a half inch of freezing rain happen twice within about 5 or 6 days in parts of North Carolina and Virginia, and that's caused a ton of power outages and downed trees. So not many places have been spared. Maybe the one exception's been the desert southwest, and California hasn't had a lot in the last couple of weeks, which is good, because they had a rough time of it in late January with flooding rains, mudslides, and snow. So they haven't been spared this winter, but they've been quieter in the last couple of weeks.
Well, that's good for them then. So, Becky, when is it going to go away? What's our outlook for the next week?
Well, I'm not gonna say the word, but I think this really anomalous pattern is finally going to break. It can't last forever. So, we might get into like the upper 30s here in Pennsylvania next week, and it's going to feel balmy.
Yeah, no kidding. It's above zero. Well, that's
soon. I mean, we're mid-Feb, you know, give it a month. Maybe we'll start seeing some decent temperatures, you know. In Colorado, you can get some real nice days in March.
Well, we had some sun today, but it was still very cold because, you know, there's still a lot of snow on the ground and so forth. So, well, let's cross our fingers. That's the best we can do with that. So, any questions, Joe? Like what's happening in Memphis and when's it going away?
No, it's supposed to be 60 here in 5 days, of all crazy things. So we'll have a lot of waterlogged stuff, and I have a lot of repair work to do.
Oh, my God, Joe. It's one thing after another in that house, it seems. Keep your dogs warm.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, well, there we go. There's the weather. Crazy, ever-changing, off-the-wall weather. So, Jamie, let's move on to the next thing. We had a question come up that got funneled to us, and we wanted to find the right person to address it with this person. And we found Norm Itkowitz, who is well-known to Joe Hawley and also some of the other folks that we've had on here. Randy, if you remember him. So he has worked, but the thing that makes him special, he works with fire, police, and the military. Previously worked for the VA and just has done a whole lot of things. So rather than me trying to figure it out, why don't you go ahead and tell us about yourself, Norm?
Well, I'm a clinical psychologist by training, and I wound up in Memphis via actually my own weather disaster. I was working in New Orleans in 2005 with the New Orleans VA in the PTSD program there. And there was a young lady that swept by in late August. Her name was Katrina. And she took our family up to Memphis, Tennessee, where we wound up relocating as a result. And I just to kind of give you a little sense of myself, you know, Hurricane Katrina was rather discombobulating, as you might imagine. And, you know, even for somebody like myself who has all these supposed skills, I found myself struggling for about 3 or 4 months with sleep as a result of it. So I'm pretty sensitive to the fact that trauma, especially trauma that's experienced at much higher levels than I experienced with Katrina, can cause a variety of symptoms over time. So I worked at the Memphis VA for 15 years in the PTSD program, and also working with some in the seriously mentally ill program as well. So in where I've had a very, very, very complex PTSD cases. I've been working with the police and fire department in Memphis, doing critical incident stress debriefing, training police officers and the crisis intervention team, and helping train peer counselors with Randy. So that's a little bit about my background.
So can you tell us a little about your experience during Katrina? Did you get flooded out?
Oh, yeah. We lost pretty much most, I would say about 85% of our possessions got lost in the flooding. We went down to New Orleans from Connecticut in a big tractor trailer, and we came from New Orleans to Memphis in a 15-foot U-Haul.
Oh, my goodness. Well, it just goes to show you, even psychologists can be negatively affected by something like this. No one's immune, right?
No one's immune. And that's an important point for people to realize, that part of what we all have to work on, because we never know when stress is going to hit, is developing our own sense of resilience and developing our own sense of what's going to help us in difficult situations.
Yeah, and I want to talk some more about that. But what about your experiences working with military, police, and fire? How has that been for you?
It's certainly something I will tell you that I love doing. My work with in the military, working with the VA, and actually very early on, engaging in research. We did longitudinal research. I was on a team that went to Fort Hood and Fort Lewis to do testing prior to the first deployment to Iraq, and then we went back and did follow-up research. So it was longitudinal research on veterans who had, came back from Iraq and were training to actually go back. Can't really give you much in the way of data from that. I can only tell you what my personal experience was really with that, because much of the data was lost in Hurricane Katrina.
Oh, that's really unfortunate. But a curious question, are you finding similarities in the kinds of issues you see with the military as opposed to police and fire, or are they very different experiences?
When it comes to PTSD, I see a lot of similarities. They are different experiences in terms of what may cause or what are the situations that cause it. But they're definitely, the PTSD is quite similar. If you trained and you can recognize the symptoms of PTSD, they're quite similar.
That makes sense.
But the way they enter it might, even though it's through trauma, might be a little bit different. And let me just give you a quick example. I think for Look, and I want to be very careful about this. I wouldn't minimize either experience of trauma that a military veteran experiences versus what maybe a police officer or a firefighter experiences. But there is a time-limited quality to many of the soldiers. So they're maybe in Iraq for a year, or, you know, certainly with these more recent deployments, you know, some of my veterans were in Iraq or Afghanistan 2-3 times. But there was a terminality to it in terms of, you know, they came home and they had to reintegrate into their homes. Whereas firefighters and police officers, you know, if they're going to do a 25-year career, can oftentimes the accumulation of stressors over time becomes more apparent, and it kind of shows itself in a different way.
That's a really good point. Joe, thoughts?
Sorry, Sam, you kind of dropped out there. What was the question?
Oh, I was just calling on you in case you had any thoughts so far.
No, I'm definitely fascinated to hear more, particularly about the similarities and sort of what the common elements are here between sort of the civilian side and the military side, because I feel like there's an awful lot of crossover. And, you know, it's less to me about the particular maybe theater that you experienced the trauma in, and much more to me about the similarities between the types of traumas that people experience in those disaster situations, wartime situations, or you know, life and death situations that law enforcement, et cetera, may deal with.
So yeah, the way the PTSD expresses itself certainly is very similar. And certainly, look, trauma is trauma. Whether you're one of your buddies killed in the theater in Iraq, or if you're dealing with death and of a fellow police officer, for example, in the community, the symptoms, if they're going to express themselves as symptoms, are going to be the same. And I also want to be clear about this. Not everybody who experiences trauma is going to experience PTSD. Many soldiers and police officers and firefighters throughout their career somehow manage to avoid PTSD through a combination of resources that really enables them to manage the stresses that they're under. I wish I could give you more of an understanding of why I believe that some people get it and some people don't. But there is clear to me that there are people who are much more skilled at dealing with some of the intense stress that they experience in various theaters or conflict zones.
Norm, how much of that comes from people's own coping skills? I know people have different coping mechanisms, some better than others. How big a factor is that?
I think it's a fairly big factor, actually, that coping skills, having the resources to deal with certain life events, can really make a difference. I think that there are a number of things. I think it could be different for different people. I think that for some people, I've seen faith be a very, very big part of their ability to cognitively manage difficult traumatic situations. For other people, having the social support and the resources that, you know, at home can make a very big difference. Having somebody to talk to, I find really can make a difference. Just to give you a quick example, you know, if I'm talking to a group of first responders, and I go around the room and I ask them if they have somebody who they can share their experience with, and you know, if I have 10 in a room and 5 of them tell me that they can share with their partner the kinds of experiences they have, I think that that makes a big difference to them in terms of how they manage. Because having somebody at home who actually understands what you're going through can really make a difference. It's interesting because you see little differences, like there are differences between police and fire, because a lot of the firefighters are working as a team and living together and eating together. And if they have a good firehouse, for example, they will process stressors amongst themselves. And oftentimes that can be a very, very good way to manage the trauma and the stresses that they are confronted with.
Oh, I agree. I worked with fire departments for many years doing that, where police don't really have that option. They might have one partner that they ride around with. But Becky, you're the mental health advocate for meteorologists. What are your thoughts on this so far?
Yeah, you know, I think the question that keeps coming up in a lot of different fields, and Norm, you kind of alluded to it with the difference between, you know, military with an end time and, you know, firefighters and police officers, but even more like immediate than that, what do you do when you've experienced a traumatic event and everyone around you seems to just be ignoring that it happened and you're sitting here struggling and trying to cope and trying to pretend like everything's normal? I mean, what do you do in that situation if you don't have that support?
That's a really good question, because I think that you can definitely see that happening. Well, let's go back to the firefighting example. For example, if I go to 5 different firehouses, I'm going to see 5 different kinds of and see 5 different kinds of crews. I'm going to see different levels of being able to share with your colleagues. And I think that when you have situations where people go to their own corner, I think that makes it much more difficult for someone who is undergoing stress and somehow believes that they have to handle it on their own. So what should that person do? I think they need to find someone. And it may not be from their, you know, where they're working. They need to find someone who they can talk to, someone who can understand. Many fire departments, police departments, military organizations have behavioral health programs available for people to talk to. Now, it's oftentimes the problem is getting people from point A to point B. When they feel like they can't really admit that they have a problem. And that's always a challenge, I think, for all of us who work in mental health. So it's interesting. I took a combat class with someone from the Israeli Special Forces. And so we're going through this combat training, and I'm not military myself. And the part of the reason why I went through that experience was because I've always had this kind of fear that I wouldn't be able to react in a situation that was difficult. So if you go back and you look at the video of the Boston Marathon bombing, you'll see it's only a few minutes long, but you see 3 kinds of reactions. You see there are people who are distinctly running away from where the explosion happened. You see people wandering around aimlessly with that, what we'd call that 10,000 mile stare. And you also see a group of people running towards the danger. So I asked my trainer, I said, what do you do when you freeze? And his answer was very interesting to me, because I think it speaks to the letter, you know, answering that letter that that you got, which is basically, he said, you have to move. If you feel frozen, you have to move. And it's just the act of moving which sends a signal to your brain which you have to, that you have to do something in this situation. And I believe that that goes to the sense of control people need to establish for themselves when they're working in stressful environments, and there's not anything they can do about it. Does that make sense?
Bex, does that answer your question?
It does, you know, and I'm trying to think of a situation, a time where I've been in that situation and what my response has been, but I've never been in something, you know, quite that traumatic. I've seen car accidents happen and I've struggled to even relay information to 911 correctly. So I don't know. It's just I think it's a tough thing to know how you would respond or react until you're in it. And so, I mean, I can certainly pass that information along to the person that reached out to me. And I hope they're able to move, as you said, and to take action.
I think that part of the answer is really practice. I mean, look, if you go to basic training as a soldier, or if you go through, if you're going through training to become a police officer or a firefighter, what is the thing that they do that makes enables them to react in situations? The first thing they do is they practice responding over and over again, doing things over and over again. So what happens is they develop this sense of muscle memory on how to respond. If you really talk to some of the firefighters or police officers and you ask them what happens in a very stressful situation, they'll tell you more often than not that their training kicked in. And that is really quite common in those situations. So I believe that it's important to practice just... For people who are civilians and living at home don't prepare for some emergency, they don't know what to do in an emergency. But if you have a plan and you practice that plan, I think that you begin to develop a sense of competence that helps you deal with particular situations. So, for example, just having a plan for what happens if you wake up in the middle of the night and your smoke detector is going off and you have children in the house. If you've practiced a plan a number of times, you're going to know more about what to do than if you've never done anything to practice.
Really good point. We've been preaching that for 9 years. That's a really good point. But, you know, what we're kind of leading into here is all of us, be them meteorologists, military, first responders, police, fire, ER docs, we all get in those situations where we have to function. We can't really go out and take a break when it starts to feel overwhelming. Even emergency management people, Joe has a term for it called walking burnout. How do we cope with those situations where you're in the thick of it and, you know, disaster workers too, you just can't leave. You've got to see it through.
Sometimes you just have to practice your breathing while you're doing it. I think I mentioned that establishing a sense of control is the most important thing that I think you can do in that situation. If you can just, I think when I was writing that letter, I talked a little bit about, you know, it's really kind of amazing what people are capable of doing. If you think of a Nordic skier who has to go from cross-country skiing where their heart rate goes up to, you know, the 140, 150, and then they have to stop on a dime, get their rifle out, and then shoot at targets that are, you know, fairly distant and hit those targets. They have to learn to decrease their heart rate in a matter of a couple of seconds. And that is a skill. When you're working under difficult circumstances, usually what happens is your adrenaline kicks in and you just keep going and going and going until you literally until you do burn out and you have to stop. But I think that, again, it comes down to developing a sense that you can learn to control yourself, control your breathing, and that really helps enable a person to make it through those difficult circumstances. People are really capable of doing far more than they think they're able to do in difficult circumstances. Now, when they get out of it, then usually you'll see a crash.
Oh yeah, I'd been there, and I used to do peer counseling for. I was a paramedic supervisor and had to take care of a lot of people out there in the field. But mm-hmm. that's what I remember doing. Your point about muscle memory and training is you just do what you need to do, and then afterwards you go puke in the bushes. You know, whatever. Right. Whatever you need to do, but
now, you can't stop. I mean, if you're in a life-saving situation and it's continuing, you can't like just say, hey, I need to go smoke a cigarette. you gotta be able to do everything you need to do because what do they say? That's my job, and it's then afterwards, you know. Where I feel for some of the emergency workers really is that, you know, when you're repeatedly exposed to these situations and you don't have a time, you don't get a break, and you don't get a time to kind of process information, and it's like having a bucket under a leak, right? Eventually, you're going to get a drip, drip, drip. And all of a sudden, you know, it's going to overflow.
And if
you don't learn to deal with the in between those drips, you're going to get overwhelmed. And that's what frightens me. I think that, you know, when people are in it who are trained and they're in it, they generally function.
So true. Last question. What are some key things we need to know about building resilience?
Well, I think it's different for different people. I think that you have to know what your... First of all, I think you need to know what your strengths are. So if you're verbal and you're able to talk to someone and you feel comfortable talking with somebody, I think that using your verbal skills might be... A good tool to use. On the other hand, there are some people who just, you know, for whatever, whether it's their personality, they're just not big talkers. You know, if I go into a group and I'm talking to people, you know, I'll get 10 different answers. You know, I exercise. You know, the one that's, you know, the people who exercise, they may not talk a lot, but, you know, they have a way of kind of de-stressing through running or lifting. You know, it could be, you know, I used to get a lot of back from the veterans I would work with when I would suggest that they do yoga or they do meditation. But, you know, if you go into a VA now, you're going to find there's going to be a mindfulness class. There's going to be a yoga class. You know, just these are the kinds of things that really do help de-stress individuals. Now, people have to find what works for them.
That's cool. Joe, final thoughts?
Well, I think that was a powerful point. You know, I think that it is a matter of figuring out what works for the individual, but you've got to try lots of different techniques before you can figure out the one that works for you. So, you know, to me, the take home message is don't be afraid to try yoga, meditation, running, you know, whatever. Give those things an opportunity because you never know which one is going to be the right thing for you.
Yeah, amen. And
if I could just one final thought about, you know, when, you know, everything is not working really well and perhaps PTSD starts to set in, finding a good therapist who is skilled in working with first responders and we're working with people who are under this kind of stress, it's a really important thing. There are probably a lot of therapists out there. Not all of them are trained to really provide trauma treatment. You need to find good trauma experienced therapists.
Oh, I totally agree with that. Becky.
I just cannot second the therapist comment more. I have been seeing the same therapist for over 6.5 years now, and she's fantastic. It's something that really has such a significant impact on your life. And I wish more people had that access. I wish it was just so much more readily available, especially after the year that we have all had. It's just, it's necessary for, I think, 99.9% of people. Just having that unbiased opinion, someone who knows and understands you after a time period, it really is just a really valuable tool. Just like you would go to the doctor to take care of physical symptoms, you go to a therapist to take care of mental and emotional symptoms.
Yep, that's the fact. And I think Norm makes a good point. You can't go get a marriage and counselor for, you know, traumatic PTSD when you're a first responder. You got to find the right one. Dan, any thoughts from you? You've been sitting there quietly.
No, I've been sort of absorbing and fascinated by the whole conversation. You know, it's something that learning more about, I think it's great to hear the perspective from a non-meteorology standpoint. That's sort of a lot of my world. So it's been fascinating to hear the conversation about how this applies to all facets of emergency response and the military as well. So I really appreciate Norm's insight on this.
And if I can, I'll give one more insight, and that is to the therapists who might be listening, which is that we're not immune either. You know, if you listen long enough, if you're listening to people long enough, it can have an impact on the way you think and feel as well. And you know, we're also in the helping professions, as fire and police and EMTs, and you know, so when you're in a helping profession, a lot of times you don't want to seek help. Therapists also sometimes get overwhelmed as well.
Yep. Jamie, it's all you.
Yeah, I know. Back when I was actively riding and as a paramedic and working as a nurse, that my wife always seemed to know when I was had a difficult day, difficult call, because I'd come home and clean. And I think it was my way of putting order back to things, was straightening up the house and cleaning things. And she knew she needed to talk to me, but she used to joke that she needed the house cleaned first.
I do that, Jamie. I do that.
So, you know, it's a funny thing that you say that, because lately I have developed a cleaning routine. In the morning when I wake up, I go downstairs and I clean up, and I'm beginning to wonder if it's the last few weeks of, you know, some of the stresses that I've been handling with my work have affected me to the point where I might be doing that as some sort of compensation.
I'm sure you're Your people you live with appreciate that.
My wife certainly does.
Well, that's a good thing then. It's funny you say that, Jamie, because I have to reorganize my house if my life is not feeling organized. Yep. Oh, my goodness.
Definitely. And, you know, one of the things that came up, you know, was the need to have the training that gets you to move, as Norm said, was that the need to, when you feel like you're going to freeze, is to move, make that first step and move in a direction. And our training helps us do that. And Joe, you guys with Paragon Medical Education Group have really gone to great effort to provide experiential training for the people that work with you to give them the tools they need to move in those stressful situations.
Well, I think that's exactly what it's all about. You know, not only is it related to the training being in place to be able to respond, but to help you in difficult situations, especially when you're struggling on your own. So, as Norm pointed out, it's all about the training in many cases.
Where can folks find you at Paragon Medical Education Group if they want to look into bringing some of your training resources into their jurisdiction or region?
Well, we always love to talk to folks, and they can find us at ParagonMedicalGroup.com or on Facebook at Paragon Medical Group. And they can always reach us through the Disaster Podcast website or the Disaster Podcast Facebook page.
Thank you, Joe. And we do appreciate the continued sponsorship that brings the Disaster Podcast out each week. We have been doing this a long time, and it's been a great partnership. Norman, is there a place that you'd like people to reach out to you if they had questions about this specific topic, you know, that might seek some direction to some additional resources?
Yes, I'm available at docnorman50@yahoo.com.
Excellent. Well, we'll definitely connect people with that and have a link for them in the show notes for this episode. Dan, where can folks find you?
I can be found on Twitter at WXDepot, also LinkedIn and Facebook.
Great. Becky, how about you?
Same places as Dan, Twitter at WX_Bex, LinkedIn, and the Disaster Podcast Facebook group.
And Sam? Sam?
I was trying to, my cursor didn't seem to want to find the mute button. In all the places above mentioned under Sam Bradley or Sam Bradley 11, and as mentioned, the Disaster Facebook group. Jamie?
And, of course, you can find me under the handle PodMedic in most social media locations out there. So please friend, follow, or otherwise catch up with me there. And, of course, DisasterPodcast.com, where you can find links to subscribe to the show on your favorite mobile devices or even by email. And always at our Disaster Podcast Facebook group, where we have a vibrant community there continuing to grow, and we're certainly available to answer questions that come up. We look forward to when people post links and other articles that we can share within the group and start the conversation. Sam, a great episode. I'm glad we were able to get Norman on the show.
Oh, me too. Thanks, Norm. I hope I had so many other questions I want to ask you. We're going to have you back because I'm not done picking your brain.
Well, just, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So many topics that we could discuss with you, but I don't know, Jamie. I think for this one, it's just if you need help, get help and take care of yourselves out there.